2 years ago, President Obama was inaugurated, and I began working here at USDA. And we, the President and I, shared the mutual goal of revitalizing rural America as a top priority. We recognize that in the past, the rural economy in many parts of our country needed to be strengthened, needed to be as vibrant as possible, and we needed to focus on job growth and reducing poverty. We wanted to make sure that we had a rural America that was attractive to young people and to innovation. And we refused to accept the notion that whatever may have happened in the past in rural America was necessarily a predictor of its future, which is why we embraced this vision of a revitalized rural economy that creates real opportunity for growth and prosperity. And over the past 2 years, we've been working hard here at USDA to make that vision a reality. One of the centerpieces of that vision is our nation's capacity to increase our production and use of renewable energy. Renewable energy, and particularly biofuels, in our view, presents an extraordinary opportunity to move away from our dangerous dependence on foreign oil and to reduce the risks to our environment. We say, why not create it from the hard work of our farmers, ranchers, and growers in rural America? The Congress recognized that in establishing the Renewable Fuel Standard, known as the RFS2, when it set it as a national goal, producing 36 billion gallons of biofuels by 2022. In October of last year, I delivered a speech at the National Press Club discussing how we at USDA and the rest of the federal government would work to meet this goal. Now, we believe it's critical and crucial to develop a biofuel industry powered by feedstocks produced in every corner of the country. In addition to what's occurring in the Midwest, we want that same type of activity in all parts of our country. That's why we established 5 regional research centers working on science necessary to ensure that profitable biofuels can be produced from a diverse range of feedstocks. And I also explained that shortly after giving the speech in October, that we would be working on trying to figure out ways in which we could invest in biofuels and biomass to energy projects in each of the 5 regions of the country. So today I'm happy to report that we're making good on that pledge in our continued effort to revitalize rural America. Today I'm announcing support through the Biorefinery Assistance Program, Section 9003 of the 2008 Farm Bill, to help build 3 new biorefineries in the southeastern part of the country. We believe these projects will help to create hundreds of jobs and be capable of producing more than 70 million gallons of advanced biofuels using a variety of feedstocks that include woody biomass, agriculture, and municipal waste. At the same time, our sister agency, the Department of Energy, is also announcing its support for a major renewable diesel facility in Louisiana that will produce 137 million gallons of diesel fuel. Our 3 projects are located in the following states. In Alabama, we're providing a letter of intent to offer a loan guarantee of $250 million to a cellulosic ethanol biorefinery facility that will produce 55 million gallons per year using renewable woody biomass as feedstock. In Mississippi, a project has been selected to receive an $80 million loan guarantee for a biorefinery that will produce 10 million gallons of advanced biofuel per year by refining dried and post-sorted municipal solid waste through a thermochemical cellulosic process. And in Florida, we're announcing a facility has been selected for a $75 million loan guarantee for a biorefinery capable of producing 8 million gallons per year of cellulosic ethanol and gross energy production capacity of 6 megawatts. This is enough to essentially provide electricity to 47 homes on an annual basis. The feedstock for this process will include primarily citrus and agricultural waste, yard waste, wood waste, and municipal solid waste. Now, these projects are in addition to the one which we announced in New Mexico, Sapphire Energy, in the western region, more than a year ago. At the same time we're making these announcements, we're also announcing funding through the Rural Energy for America program, Section 9007 of the 2008 Farm Bill, for feasibility studies for 68 bioenergy facilities in 27 states, including many in the northeast, the central eastern part of the country, as well as the northwest. For example, in New York, Cuyahoga County is receiving a public service utility service agency award $40,000 to examine a proposal to connect up to 20 local farms to a collector pipeline that will deliver farm-produced biogas to renewable heat and to produce renewable heat and power for sale to business customers. In Kentucky, we're looking at helping a company considering 3 cellulosic ethanol manufacturing facilities in that state. In Oregon, we're investing in studies to look at an algae production facility as well as a high-rate anaerobic digestion system. Now, these are just a number of the examples of the over 30 examples of projects that we are funding that will soon be underway to determine what's feasible in all parts of the country. Now, since the speech in October, we've also fulfilled our pledge to reduce the risks associated with advanced biofuel production. And for that reason, I'm pleased to announce payments to producers of advanced biofuels worth approximately $15 million under the Bioenergy Program for Advanced Biofuels, 9005. And next week, we intend to publish the final rule for this program to give advanced biofuels producers certainty about the revenue they can expect in the future. Not only will we publish this rule, but we're going to encourage more applications for assistance in building new biorefineries across the nation with the publication of a final rule for our biorefinery assistance program. So both 9003 and 9005 will have final rules. Just in conclusion, before I take questions, I want to indicate that today's announcement is a continuation of our work to promote the production of advanced biofuel, which complements our other work and other sister agencies' work in helping to build a nationwide biofuels industry, which includes research into feedstocks, encouraging farmers to produce those feedstocks, and the necessary and needed infrastructure to deliver fuel to consumers. In the end, we look to work with private business and entrepreneurs to capitalize on American ingenuity and to drive a rapid expansion in a profitable domestic production of biofuels. And I've seen rural America rise again and again to meet challenges of providing food and feed and fiber for the country, and I have no doubt that they'll be able to meet our energy challenge in the future. As I said before, we have this vision for a strong economic future. It relies on homegrown energy. The Obama administration is working hard to make this vision a reality, and we look forward to these projects and many more as time goes on.
Reporters, if you want to get in and ask a question of the Secretary, let us know by pressing star 1 on your touch-tone phone. And Chuck Beck, I guess you... Let's go to you, and he's with Ethanol Today magazine. Chuck. Chuck, are you there?
Yeah, I am here. I just wanted to ask... what kind of funding do you see for blender pump infrastructure down the road in 2011 and 2012?
Well, specifically at USDA, we've been working with the Department of Energy to encourage it, to encourage states that have resources under the Recovery Act available to assist at the state level blender pump and distribution system assistance. And we know a handful of states that have accepted that challenge and using some of the resources that are still available to them under the energy grants to states to do that. In addition, we're taking a look at our own REAP program to determine how it might potentially be used to promote the distribution system and the blender pumps that are we think are important to making sure that we not only increase demand for this product, but that we also make supply convenient. And we know that Congress, no doubt, will be discussing over the course of the next 12 months the tax incentives that are currently in place for at least another 12 months that have been providing help to this maturing industry. And there may very well be a debate and conversation about whether or not incentives that are currently being provided can be directed in a different direction and a more beneficial direction today, given where the industry is and where it needs to go.
Okay. Thank you.
Next on the line, Cindy Zimmerman with AgWire.com. Cindy.
Good afternoon, Mr. Secretary. I wanted to get your comments. It looks like Range Fuels can you hear me? It looks like Range Fuels in Georgia is having some financial problems. They got loan guarantees from USDA, your first ever loan guarantee for a commercial cellulosic ethanol plant. They also had a grant from the Department of Energy, but they've had problems raising private funds to help keep it going, to expand the plant. So that's still an issue, I guess, and I wanted to get your comments about that, about how this next-generation ethanol biofuels are going to survive in order, how they're going to get additional funding from the private sector.
I'd say a couple of things. First of all, we are hopeful that Range Fuels will be able to work through their technology issues, which I think are at the heart of concerns that have been expressed by folks who are interested in investing but just want to be certain that their investment has a good opportunity for success. It's one of the reasons why it was important for us in our efforts in establishing a real commitment to biofuels to establish these research centers in all five parts of the country so that we can aid and assist in identifying workable technologies and ensuring that these technologies are ultimately going to be efficient so that it's profitable. I think it's also important to note that with the renewable fuel standard goal, there's going to be a need for additional biofuels, and by virtue of congressional action, it must be met in large part through advanced biofuels. Our efforts, together with the Energy Department's efforts, I think are really designed to prime the pump. That, combined with the congressional mandate and directive, if we structure our incentive programs properly in terms of the tax credits, I still think that there's a tremendous opportunity here, and I think the fact that we're making these announcements today, we're announcing between ourselves and the Department of Energy four rather significant projects, together with feasibility studies in a variety of states across the country, as well as additional support for producers of these feedstocks, indicates our belief that this industry is here to stay.
Up next on the line, we have Dan Looker from Successful Farming Magazine, followed by Matt Kay of the Burns Bureau. Dan, you there?
Yes, I am. Good afternoon, Mr. Secretary. I wanted to ask about the biomass crop assistance program. There is some speculation that that program may be reduced or not receive full funding in Congress. And I wondered how that would affect some of the projects that you've announced today, and two, your feeling about how much support there is for the BCAP program in Congress.
Well, I think that the tremendous reaction to the BCAP program from producers across the country, and the fact that we were able to make literally hundreds of awards across the country in a variety of feedstock opportunities, and a number of facilities encouraging us to work with them to identify producers, it suggests that this is a program that, A, is important, and, B, is popular, and, C, may well be necessary in the short run in order to get this industry in a place where we sort of work out the inefficiencies and devise supply chains that make sense. I think as Congress learns of the success of the fact that we are implementing this and that there's a significant positive reaction from the countryside, I think they'll understand the necessity of making sure that there's adequate financing. We obviously live in an environment of constrained resources, and there are no sacred cows, and there shouldn't be. But I believe that this program will still have congressional support, and we will use it as an important tool in connection with biorefinery assistance, in connection with tax policy, in connection with EPA's efforts and recent efforts in allowing E15 for vehicles 2007 and later. All of this combined, the Energy Department's announcement today, all of this combined, it creates, I think, momentum, creates an interest, creates an enthusiasm for this. And we're seeing this reflected in increased market share, if you will, of renewable energy and fuel sources in terms of our total energy production in the country, and I think the trend lines are still in a very positive way.
Next on the line, Matt Kay with the Burns Bureau. Matt.
Yeah, good afternoon, Mr. Secretary. Two quick questions. One is, this month, the World Ag Supply and Demand Estimates report showed that the demand by ethanol for corn now at 4.9 billion bushels and 14.5 billion gallons of ethanol is surpassing the renewable fuel standard at about 12.6 billion gallons for 2011. What do you see as the implications for that for corn supply and price, and the policy implications of it for the debate that you referenced a few minutes ago And secondly, if you have any update for us on the E15 testing that's still going on for older model vehicles, 2001 to 2006, if you could share that with us, we'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Okay. You know, the issue of corn production and its relationship to ethanol production, and it further its relationship to supplies and other issues inherent in supplies, whether it's price or the availability of food. I just simply want to say that I have tremendous confidence in the capacity of American agriculture to meet any challenge. And that includes a productivity challenge. It's met those challenges over the past several decades. We've seen a remarkable increase in productivity. I think we're going to continue to see that. Clearly, corn prices are very strong today. There are a multitude of reasons for that. Obviously we are keeping an eye on that as it relates to the ability of our livestock producers and our dairy producers to be able to be profitable as well. We want a balance in agriculture. We want everybody to do as well as we possibly can. These announcements, to be clear, and to underscore it, these are about feedstocks that are not corn, that are other than corn, that are the type of thing that we're trying to stress here today, which is that this industry cannot just simply be necessarily Midwestern-based or corn or one commodity-based. It really has the potential and the opportunity to be in every part of the country using whatever resource is most plentiful in that part of the country, which over time should take some of the pressure off of corn. And we may learn how to use other parts of the corn crop that don't necessarily jeopardize our capacity in the future to meet whatever feed or fiber or food needs we might have. As it relates to E15, honestly, we're waiting, as is everyone else. My belief is that we'll have a decision sooner rather than later. But I'm not aware of what that decision is or when it might be forthcoming.
We'll go back to our phone calls. Dina Marin with Climate Wire, followed by Tom Ryder at radio station WNAX. Dina.
Good afternoon, Mr. Secretary. Thanks for taking my call. I was hoping to ask you quickly a little bit more about your beliefs regarding whether or not we'll be able to meet the cellulosic ethanol goal for the RFS2 for 2011, and also if you can expand on if this loan guarantee comes with any sort of a requirement to produce a certain amount by a certain year.
Well, to the latter, I mean, there are commitments and there are primarily financial conditions that are part of any loan commitment we make, and there obviously is a partnership that we have with private lenders. So those are all contractual, and it's all part of a process. What we do basically by providing these guarantees is we reduce risk. I forgot the last part of the question.
Whether or not there was a requirement to produce a certain amount by a certain time for each of these respective projects, and if you believe we'll be able to meet the cellulosic ethanol target for 2011.
We've had to adjust those targets. We've hit those targets every year after they've been adjusted. I think it's fair to say that that we've got some work to do to get on a glide path to get to 36 billion gallons, but that's one of the great things about these announcements. It's one of the great things about the Farm Bill in the way in which we're implementing it. There's a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of interest. We wouldn't have all these feasibility studies that we're funding in states across the country. We wouldn't be having these producers who are interested in being part of this effort that are being funded and helped as part of our announcements today and in the past. We wouldn't have the interest in BCAP if there weren't a belief on the part of American agriculture and rural America that we can get to 36 billion gallons. That's the goal. We're going to work as hard as we possibly can to promote as much as we can to get there. And we know there's a clear roadmap here. It's clear that it has to be something other than corn. It's clear that it will be multiple technologies. It won't be any single feedstock, and it won't be any single technology. It'll be a combination of those things, and we'll try to figure out what's most efficient, most effective in each part of the country. The reason being, at the end of the day, is that we want prosperity to return to all parts of rural America. And if it does, then we'll be able to retain our young people. We'll see unemployment continue to go down as it has recently. We'll see poverty rates decline. We'll see more folks consider the opportunities that farming and ranching and growing provide. And we'll we'll see hopefully more vibrancy and more economic activity in small communities across the country.
Next, Tom Ryder with radio station WNAX, followed by Henry Stevens with Scripps Treasure Coast newspaper. Tom.
Yes, good afternoon, Mr. Secretary. Mr. Secretary, away from the biofuels question, my question has to do more with the congressional leaders wanting to see full deregulation of Roundup Ready alfalfa. Would you like to comment on that, sir?
Well, I spent a couple of hours in front of a congressional committee today talking about that, and I think I'll just let my testimony pretty much speak for itself. I will just reiterate very quickly the points I made. Number one, we recognize our responsibilities under the Plant Protection Act. We take them very seriously. Number two, we understand that our decision, whatever that decision might be, needs to be done on a timely basis so that folks who are waiting to try to decide what to do and when to do it and how to do it will have enough time and enough direction to be able to do it. Number three, we recognize that any decision that is made has to be science-based. That is what the law requires, and that is what we will do. Number four, what we have seen from the review of the EIS is the parties who have a variety of interests in alfalfa, whether it's GE, non-GE, organic, have started a dialogue, have identified areas where they agree. They have identified areas where there is the need for additional discussion. And I think perhaps most importantly of all, from my perspective, they've identified areas where USDA can be specifically helpful in ensuring that we have sufficient supplies of seed of whatever kind so that those who want to plant GE can do so, those who want to plant non-GE can do so, and those who want to plant organic can do so. And I think that has been a positive outcome. I would expect and anticipate that the discussion generally about these issues of how production systems can exist side by side will continue. It needs to continue, and I think the hearing today reflected an acknowledgement of the importance of that conversation.
Up next, Henry Stevens with Scripps Treasure Coast newspaper. Henry.
Oh, yes, that's Scripps Treasure Coast newspapers. We are on the Treasure Coast of Florida. Okay, I'm calling basically about the one happening in our little turf here. That's the INEOS New Planet Bioenergy plant that's going on in Oslo. Ever since this particular project has been in discussion, they've gone to the county commission and so forth, they've been saying that, oh, no, they're not going to use corn. They're going to use waste, vegetative waste, wood pulps, tree cuttings, grass clippings, and that sort of thing. Does the USDA involvement indicate that there really has to be more? Like, are you asking them to grow something?
No. The whole purpose of this effort is to try to expand the feedstocks that can be utilized and to see what works. This is an 8 million gallon facility, so obviously
right.
It's a facility to test and to see how vegetative waste, citrus, agricultural waste, yard waste, wood waste, municipal solid waste could be converted into energy, into fuel. This obviously would be extraordinarily important if we can figure out the appropriate mechanism for using these waste streams to produce something positive. It would add value to producers who are producing citrus. It would certainly eliminate, it would create an opportunity where right now you may be faced with, what do I do with this waste? How do I get rid of it? What is the appropriate way of getting rid of it? It would certainly take a lot of pressure off landfills, and it would provide opportunities for the wood industry to take scrap that has little or no value, that has to be discarded today, to use it again in an effective and productive way of producing more electricity or fuel for us. If it works here, then obviously it can work in a lot of other places. So this isn't about them growing anything. It's about them taking what's already being grown and what's being thrown out and converting it into something positive.
We've got time for two last calls. Philip Brasher with the Des Moines Register and Chris Bevel with Ethanol Producer Magazine. Philip.
Yes, Secretary. Back on the range fuels question, since the taxpayers are on the hook for part of that. It sounds like they are going to be shut down indefinitely. Can you say anything about how long that might be? And are these technical issues that that are common to all technology, or all the technology that's common to all of the other plants as well? Do you know anything about
that? I don't believe they're common to all operations, but in terms of the technical aspects of this, I would suggest the folks at Range Fuels would be much better positioned to respond specifically to your questions in terms of timing and in terms of what difficulties they encompassed or encountered and how long they think it's going to take them to figure it out.
Up next, our last call comes from Chris Bevel with Ethanol Producer Magazine. Chris.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if you have an amount yet, forgive me if you've already mentioned it, for how much money will be available in the 2011 window for that 9003 program, and how confident are you that this money will remain available and not be rated for other purposes?
Well, I believe we are pretty well close to utilizing all of the money that Congress directed in the 2008 Farm Bill under the 9003 program. And as you probably know, when the Farm Bill was established, not all of those energy titles were funded throughout the entire length of the Farm Bill for budget calculation reasons that I'm told occurred in order to make this fit into a certain baseline. I think part of our challenge in 2011 and part of the industry's challenge in 2011 is to figure out what works, what kind of tools we will need in the future to continue this momentum that's been built, and then make the case for the 2012 Farm Bill that there needs to be a robust commitment to energy and biofuel production.
It looks like we have time to eke in one last question, and that will be from Susan Salisbury with Palm Beach Post. Susan.
Yes, hello. Can you tell me a little bit more about why you chose the particular Florida project for the loan guarantee program? We have many projects in Florida that are in various stages, and what was it about this project that made you give it the loan guarantee?
Well, first of all, it was the combination of the feedstocks, which allowed us to sort of test a wider variety of feedstocks. In addition, there's both technology and financing for projects are at different stages, and it's incumbent upon us to make sure that we have, as best we can, we have some sense that the technology is of interest, and that that the numbers, to the extent that they have to work. We have to entertain projects as they mature, and we don't necessarily have control over how quickly technologies get to that maturation point, nor do we have much say over how well people can attract outside investment and commercial banking interest. What I can say is that we're going to watch these projects very closely. We're going to watch the Sapphire Energy project very closely. The Energy Department is primarily responsible for the Range Fuels, but we're engaged in that as well. We're going to watch what happens there, and we're going to do our very level best, as is the case with every industry. And when it gets started, there are fits and starts. It's one of the reasons why I think it's important to maintain some set of incentives. There are some in Congress who want to do away with the incentives that the ethanol industry currently enjoys. I understand the desire to do that at some point, but I think it can be prematurely done. And if it's done prematurely, as we found with the biodiesel tax credit, you can lose production capacity pretty quickly, and you can cost to folks their jobs. And right now we want to add jobs, not lose jobs, and we want to make sure that these industries can allow us to work with them to get to a point where they can help us wean ourselves down from our over-reliance on foreign oil. Let's remember, very important fact here, let's remember that when Jimmy Carter and the country were discussing this energy issue for the first time, I think we were importing somewhere around 30% of our oil. Today we're importing 60%. So despite all of the concerns that have been expressed, we need to get serious about this. We can't continue to import 60% of our energy needs from foreign sources. We've got to be much more in control of our own destiny here.